Hello and welcome to the Fandamentals podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode is writer, critic, and host of the Ramblin' and Amblin' podcast, Andrew Godian. Andrew was kind enough to give me some of his time to discuss one of the most iconic movie franchises of all time, the Rocky movies. It's a movie franchise that is rich with iconic characters, rousing music, heartwarming moments, and so much more, all of which we get into in this conversation. So, without further ado, let's get to that conversation. This is the Rocky franchise with Andrew Godian. Hello, Andy, and welcome to the Fandamentals podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. So, when we got chatting, you threw out the topic of not one, not two, not three, but I think several of the Rocky Balboa films. So,
yeah,
I'm really curious to hear more about this because I'm someone who's only ever seen like one, maybe two. I'd love to know.
Which ones have you seen out of interest?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think I've seen one, most of four, and I've seen the two Creed films. So I'm sort of, cherry picked a few, but I'd love to know.
That's quite a like little contained franchise in and of itself.
It is. Yeah. So I'd love to know, Andy, how did you sort of first come to meet the Rocky franchise? What was your sort of entry point to it?
I kind of pin it back to what I coined my summer of origin of like Andy the cinephile, because when I was about 11 years old, I was out of school for about 2 months with a chest infection that kind of knocked me for six. And one of my friends and his mum just lent me a load of box sets to watch. And it was the first time I got introduced to the Alien franchise at the age of 11, which I turned out all right, so it's okay. the Die Hard trilogy, again, pretty intense stuff for an 11-year-old, but
yep.
I lapped it up. But probably the one that I really clung to out of the bunch that they let me borrow was the Rocky box set, which had, at that time, it was only 1 to 5. I consumed all five of them in the space of, I want to say, about 2 days. And for someone who was feeling very sorry for themselves and a bit down in the dumps being ill, there was something very infectious about the energy and level of spirit and perseverance that was exhibited in all five, even at their lowest points. They still have that core kind of joyful, hard to kind of deny yourself that sense of motivation that they all give you in some way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I've only seen a couple, but that is something I think the franchise is very well known for, is it's got a lot of positivity and there's a lot. I mean, the first film, the whole story is it's an underdog story, very much in every sense of the word. So I think I can see why that would be quite comforting when you're perhaps feeling at your lowest.
Definitely. And then from then on, how that kind of relationship has grown, it's as I got more and more into film, as you get older and watch more and appreciate the kind of cultural value that certain things have that you're watching that you maybe wouldn't really be that really bothered in kind of associating with when you're just a kid watching them, and you start to realize how much this franchise is kind of so strange and kind of an outlier of most of the other big franchises of its kin, because it's very hard to think of other franchises that have gone on for 40 years that don't feature a gun or someone in spandex or a lightsaber.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Because how many films are they up to now? Yeah, you have to educate me.
So we're on 8. So there's the 6 Rocky films and the 2 Creed films. And there is a Creed 3 in development. So there's more where that came from. And I think part of, as a film fan, I, very much grew to follow Sylvester Stallone a lot more in as I grew up as well. I was umming and ahhing over whether to just do Stallone movies or Schwarzenegger movies, because those kind of big 80s action movies are also, a deep, deep love of mine, but there's something particularly about the Rocky films that just feels a bit, cuts a bit deeper and is a bit closer to, I know, something that you can appreciate both on a kind of like ironic level, but also really quite deeply love as well.
I mean, the whole thing with this podcast is just that, it's exploring people loving. You don't have to love it ironically. If you love it deeply, if there's something that connects with you, that's great. And that's what I want to hear more about. And from my understanding, it's something that you talked about there, you know, doing the whole gambit of Stallone movies. My understanding is this was the film that kicked off his whole career, wasn't it? This was very much his baby, like he looked after.
Absolutely. So he'd only done like a couple of small roles in the early 70s. He was an extra in a porno once as well, so this was kind of the place he was starting out at. And like the whole big story around, like, particularly the first Rocky, is how he really was championing himself to be the star of it, because he had this script that a lot of Hollywood loved, but a lot of studios that he was shopping around to just were not keen on casting him as the lead role, because no one knew his name. People wanted like James Caan or Robert Redford to do it. But he really stuck to his guns and said, I will not sell you this script until you say I can do it. And then it was Erwin Winkler and Robert Chartoff, who are quite powerhouse players in the 70s in Hollywood, were the ones who went, yeah, okay, we'll give it a shot.
Right. Do you think...
And the rest is history.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, that's one of the films that I've seen, and I get the sense watching it that, I wonder how you feel about this, that part of that kind of bleeds through on the screen a bit. I think that's kind of what makes his performance so good, is that he's genuinely putting his whole career on the line. And it's like it's very much a parallel to the character's journey throughout the film.
Yeah, I would even kind of extend that to the whole franchise as a whole, because it's the whole thing is like Stallone's baby, really. So out of the original six Rocky films, he directed number two, number three, number four, and number six, Balboa. And he's written all of, the only one he doesn't have a writing credit on in the whole franchise is the first Creed. So I think you can really kind of translate the kind of career trajectory that he had outside of the Rocky story and how they kind of parallel each other. Because you've got the first one, like you say, someone really putting it all on the line and just going for their one in a million shot at the title. The second one's all about, okay, what do I do after I've had my million to one shot? How do I follow this up? How am I going to kind of come back and match a similar level that's anxiety that's expressed in the film? And it's surely anxiety he was having coming in as a writer and director. And then the third one is like the first full-out 80s one where it's starting to turn Rocky into a superhero to kind of match the star wattage of Stallone at the time. Because like the first two, he's still this quite like paunchy fighter. But then the third one, he comes back, his hair's all feathered and boifed and he's completely ripped. He's like, it's a movie star now. It's not a 70s discovery anymore. And then that's, of course, carried over into Rocky IV, which is just a complete kind of the era of Stallone as the Reagan poster boy, with where Rocky and Rambo are kind of both matching up to the same kind of wearing the American flag and fighting the good fight and trying to end the Cold War in a boxing match, which he almost did.
I was going to say, I mean, we might laugh at it a little bit now, but it nearly worked.
That is like the kind of peak of Stallone in the 80s, and that is so exhibited in that movie because that is just full on 80s overdrive.
Oh, big
and
time.
Then you have Rocky V, which is right at 1990, and it kind of kicks off this chain where Stallone's slightly not as relevant anymore. He's struggling to have a hit out. He only has a couple of hits coming to and fro in the 90s, and it is that his sense of stripping Rocky down is a sense that he's kind of got to take a step back himself. And while that is the weakest film and does kind of forget some of the core elements along the way whilst it's stripping this character back down, it still has this weird place in both the franchise history and Stallone's career history as being like this marker of the kind of downturn which led to him having to kind of build himself back up again with Rocky Balboa in 2006, at this point where he hasn't had a hit for ages. So again, he's more back in a similar position than he would have been around like Rocky 1 or Rocky 2, where it's, you kind of have this slight more expectations aren't quite what they used to be. So in that, for the sake of Rocky Balboa, that kind of is a strength to it, that it manages to tap into a real emotional feeling that people probably have had to this character now, particularly that he had been away from the screen for so long, and is addressing his aging within it, and it becomes a much more emotionally enriching experience. And partly also because of how rough a ride Rocky V was as well, so even that kind of adds to this kind of development across the whole franchise for both the character and Stallone. And then you have the Creeds, which like completely again treat him like a, particularly the first Creed treats him like a human being again, who's kind of weak and vulnerable and is susceptible. He's not the superhero anymore, he is just an old aging fighter. And Stallone really, really knows how to play that in those Creed movies, and again kind of has helped in his own resurgence as someone that people are interested in seeing on screen again.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I really came back into it for those two films, and I thought both of them, like you say, were absolutely brilliant, especially for the very emotional performance given by Stallone. It was quite humanizing, and I think that's something to remember with these films, is, you know, he is a good actor when he wants to be. He's done some absolutely terrible stuff, but then loads of people have, you know, and I just
got to pay the bills.
Exactly. But just listening to what you were saying there, like, I didn't realize how much those films and that character really parallels his career. I guess that explains why he's so fond of it and protective and hasn't sort of signed it away, you know, or franchised it just to make a load of money. It's something he keeps coming back to, and it seems to be coming back to at very pivotal points in his career. So thank you for sharing that, Andy. That was really, really interesting. So I'm curious then, when did you sort of, I mean, you obviously fell in love with them, as you say, you know, watching that box set. So you've seen it up to 5 by that point. So were you really hyped then, yeah, sort of when 6 came around?
I was very hyped. So this was like 2 years into my love affair with Rocky Balboa. And I grew up on an island in the Channel Islands. I grew up on Alderney. And the cinema there, which I love and still love to this day, God bless it, did only show 2 films a month whilst I was growing up. That was kind of the volume of films coming in and out. So it was always a bit suspicious over what films would actually end up getting there. And Rocky Balboa, unfortunately, was not one that got there. So I had to wait to the DVD to come out to be able to finally see that. But I remember big hype, just kind of like knowing I'd ordered this DVD and just waiting for it to arrive. I really remember that, and particularly when you're like, how old I've been, I would have been 13 when that came out. Particularly then, time feels like so much longer when you're waiting for something like that you're really excited for. So I remember that being like a agonizing, drawn out watch, but I remember watching it with like my dad and a couple of friends came over to watch, and we all loved it. I think because we were all similarly minded in how excited we were for it. So I remember that must be one of those like first early experiences of getting really hyped for something and it being such a drawn out wait as well.
I can only imagine. And yeah, I get what you mean, especially when you're younger. Yeah, time does feel, it's all relative, but it does feel a lot longer when you're a teenager, that's for sure. So I'm just curious then, out of all the films so far, do you have a favourite, or did they kind of rotate depending on how you're feeling?
I think the first one's my favourite, just because it's the franchise, like as you've kind of pointed out as well, is that the franchise that is most raw, and it feels the most kind of bearing its, that element that it is bearing its soul. And it is just, it still feels like kind of like the scrappy underdog of the bunch, even as you watch it, because everything's slightly less refined. Even the Steadicam work, still, they're still kind of working out the balancing on that early invention. But like, all the performances are great in it, and all like the kind of key elements of the iconography are all in place already, from Bill Conte's score to running up the steps. And it is a film that's so, like, as much as it has boxing as its kind of center point, it is entirely a love story around Rocky and Adrian, which just give it just a little more emotional resonance than some of the others. But I must say, the first Creed is a very, very close tie for top spot, because I was like blown away by how invigorating that was. And it's easily the film I've rewatched the most in like the last 5 years since it came out. I watch it 2 or 3 times a year probably.
nice, that's really cool. And, so, sorry, go on.
And then beyond that, what would I have next? Probably Rocky IV would be my third favorite. Just because that hits a very different kind of appeal to like Creed 1 and the first Rocky, and that it is just pure popcorn.
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. You know, not every film has to be necessarily a deep emotional character study. You are allowed popcorn.
You just got to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember, I think it was my dad that said to me, like, seeing Rocky IV in the cinema, like, and he was saying how people in the audience were getting really riled up, you know, at the big fight at the end, because they spent so much time doing all these like over the top montages, and they've been this massive journey. And to be fair, it starts off pretty emotional, doesn't it? You know, they kill off the main character.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest death in the franchise.
And it makes sense considering that Creed 1 and 2 are then sort of born off the back of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I, same as you, I was quite surprised to see how well it built off the back of that, because it could be very easy to see that as a cash-in. You know, it's just cashing in on one of the more popular ones, and here's a big moment in the franchise, all right, we'll just build a story. It was actually quite emotional, and sort of talk to us a bit more about that then, because that's something that on the surface people might think, it's a film about boxing, how can it be so emotional?
Yeah, because I'm not someone who's even that into boxing, like I a peripheral interest, but like nothing really that helped drive me towards the Rocky movies. It's just I do find it's just kind of like the ingredients of any good sports movie are really hard to deny loving, even if you don't like any of the sports that it's kind of dramatizing. There's just something about the formula of having this kind of overt struggle on the surface of training up to fight someone, whilst also having to deal with life's problems and how they can kind of feed off of each other and affect one and the other. And it ends up being a much more, the kind of, when everything does collide and it is the big fight at the end, everything that's been going on in the film and all the characters' conflicts all are ending up on this platform for things to be hashed out. And it's very hard not to get riled up and into it by those final bouts. Like, I can even remember watching them as a kid, and like maybe my parents coming in every now and again just to see what I was watching, and just kind of like, even if they were in the middle of doing something, they just, and if it was on the final fight, they just kind of stop and watch it for a bit, because even though you like, you'll know how most of them are going to end up, but there's just something that it's very hard to tear your eyes away from, because they have managed to entwine both the personal struggles and the struggle to build up to this fight into a really neat and often quite electrifying package with a really great soundtrack at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess that's kind of the centerpiece of any good storytelling, isn't it? Is you've got to have something to care about. You've got to have characters to root for. And that's definitely, I can see that's why a lot of people look to the Rocky franchise as like a perfect example of how to present a main character and just give them so many reasons to root for them in the ring.
Yeah, he's a guy who's like, he's got a lot of, he's a very, a man who really lives by his values, and he's incredibly caring to like anybody who enters his life. Even there's loads of moments in the franchise where I think about the first Rocky, where he's been given his shot to fight Apollo Creed, and Mickey, played by Burgess Meredith, the gym owner who was training him but kind of kicked him out and called him a bum just before all this, just before he was miraculously offered the title fight. And Mickey's coming around to Rocky's apartment to kind of just basically say, I'm sorry, please let me be your trainer for this. This is a big moment. I want to be a part of it with you. And Rocky kind of lays into him saying, like, how are you are never there for me? Why should I let you come and join this journey with me? You've never done anything for me. And it's a big outburst of emotion from him. And then Mickey leaves kind of downtrodden, disheartened, but the film shows Rocky just kind of running out and apologizing, and you don't see what they're saying to each other. You just see the shots from quite far away, and you see them both in the distance kind of hashing it out, shaking hands and having a hug. And there's just so many moments of Rocky having these big outbursts, but realizing instantly the kind of value that these people have in his life, and how much what he does can't be done without the support system of people he knows will ultimately really be there for him when all this falls away. And there's a lot of moments like that where he is just a very emotional and incredibly caring individual that makes you very easy to root for him and to love him throughout all of these.
And I suppose that's a good thing, especially as a young lad, then, to see those films. That's kind of those are nice qualities to see reflected in a hero, really, in a film, isn't it? It gives you almost something to look up to and aspire to, and I suppose that's part of the reason why we have to root for him as a character. Because if he was just a horrible, you know, horrible guy that was, like you say, pushing people away and all the rest of it, you wouldn't have any necessarily the same kind of motivation, would you, to back them?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that he definitely becomes more of a kind of like figure of aspiration, but by 3 and 4, and like even to the point where, again, you can see like Stallone kind of making him his talisman figure of like, this is the guy who's always staying on the good path. He's got a rock steady marriage, and he's got kids and wealth and success. He becomes this figure to more look up to as a kind of larger than life figure. But he definitely starts out more as somebody who kind of you can recognize as kind of being a little rough around the edges, but he's really trying to basically do the right thing by the people he loves, which is a very easy motivation to get behind.
Absolutely. So, talk to us a bit more about the love story then, because you brought it up a minute ago. Mm. It is one of those like iconic, sort of infamous things. You know, you hear people kind of mimic it all the time, saying Adrian and stuff like that. But
yeah,
their sort of connection is something that will definitely go down in cinema history as one of the most sort of iconic romances and couples in film. So yeah, talk to us a bit more about that.
So it, for those maybe not too familiar, that Rocky and Adrian, the first film is very much their love story of how they very much fall in love from her being quite like a timid and shy pet shop worker that he sometimes tries to flirt with every now and again, and then eventually manages to go out on a date with her. And together he ends up finding the support and that he's always kind of lacked, because he's always shown as quite like a lonely individual in this very kind of dingy, not very well kept for apartment. And but she's been living at home with her brother Polly, played by Burt Young, who is quite he gets drunk a lot, he's quite verbally abusive to her, particularly in the first one, and feel like she's just being stifled in her home environment. And together they kind of allow Rocky finds the support he's looking for, and Adrian finds somebody who doesn't try to trap her and is just wanting to know who she is and what she likes and what she thinks about things. And like there's that famous scene where he manages to bribe someone to let them just kind of go around on the ice rink for half an hour, and that is all just about them both finding ways to take their guards down and see that there is a genuine connection between the two of them. And that runs through that whole first movie to right to the end fight, where instead of kind of like focusing on, oh, who's won, who's come out on top in this fight, that it tells you, but in a kind of offhand, distracted way, that, oh yeah, Apollo Creed won on split decision, but it doesn't really care about that. The camera is entirely focused on Adrian right out in the back of the stands, looking in on the fight, and Rocky has no interest in what the result is. He's just shouting for Adrian's name. She charges up. They tell each other they love each other, and the freeze frame of the last one is them two in an embrace. It's not holding up a title or kind of being victorious over Apollo Creed. The real victory is that those two have been able to find each other and express that they love each other. And then that kind of steadfast love is put through all the kind of paces that any sort of young married couple would go through on a slightly larger stage, granted. But they are like she remains his kind of like steadfast conscience, who will always be there to kind of, whenever he's doubting himself, to remind him of who he is and what he is capable of, which makes Rocky Balboa such a like emotionally devastating one as well, because that is entirely a film about grief. And as a spoiler for Rocky Balboa, Adrian is dead by this point. She's been dead for about 2 years before the film takes place. And that whole film is about how this man has to now deal with this grief of losing the most important person in his life. And again, it is much more about that than it is the fight in and of itself.
Wow, I'm sold. I mean, I've already seen it. But I mean, yeah, that's, again, I think something that is clearly quite important to the franchise and its longevity is those sort of human elements in it and that story. And you're right, I'd forgotten that. But yeah, that's how that film ends, is it's not about him winning or losing. It's that she is there for him in the end, you know. And because if I remember correctly, there is a bit of a back and forth, and she naturally is hesitant about supporting him, watching him, you know, get pummeled. But she comes around to be that, like you say, that sort of stable rock that he needs, that support. And so it's nice that that's how that ends. And it's more about the relationship and the journey that he's been on and being recognized not only by all the fans, but also by the person who he loves the most. And that's who can't get on board with that as a concept, exactly, for a story. Even if it does get a bit weird in the coming sequels, you know, it's, that's okay. You go on the journey with the guy, you know.
Rocky and Adrian are still there together.
Yeah. Well, you know, up to a point, but no, I should say spoilers for all the films. I'll say that up top in the show notes.
Yeah, I feel like at this juncture in the podcast, they're going to know that details are going to be discussed.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there's so much of it. I mean, again, I can only really speak to the Creed films, but as being the more recent ones. But I remember that being quite a powerful moment in the film. It's like you say, seeing Rocky as a frail old guy, and he's not got family anymore. Like you said, his wife's gone. He's sort of estranged from his son, and that was such a powerful moment. Even though the film isn't necessarily about him, you know, he's more of a sort of secondary character, those were still really good performances. And correct me if I'm wrong, he got Oscar nominated for one of them, didn't he?
He did. He got Oscar nominated for the first one.
Okay.
So I'm sure there are other examples of actors being nominated for the same character, but maybe Paul Newman. But yeah, that's a very rare case of being nominated for the same role in one lifetime. And yeah, there's something about his performance in particularly the first Creed, because he, like you say, he is in this. Polly's died by this point now as well, who was still around in Rocky Balboa, but he's gone by this point. He is estranged from his son, and there's this kind of defeatist attitude in him to when he does hear his diagnosis of cancer, I think, or maybe non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I forget which one, but yeah, and it is about, again, so he's a man who's been stripped away of his support system by elements somewhat out of his control, bar his son, which gets addressed more in the second Creed. But again, that movie is about someone coming in at his lowest point to suddenly again be a figure of support for him. In this case, it's Donnie Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan. And again, it's about him having to use that, both using those, his fight preparation and his treatment end up as like real parallels in that final act. And again, it's just a testament to them tying those two together. And also, like, Stallone's performance in that is, I always felt like, because whenever you see Stallone on Instagram or what have you, he's quite like a sprightly dude, and very well, like, he's a very healthy dude for his early 70s, and he's still quite like, he's well kept together, and he's very fit for his age. But the way he plays Rocky is this kind of, he does feel like a boxer from 30 years ago who suddenly had like all the weight of all the kind of hits and pummels over the years. Kind of he slogs around, he's got this kind of like shifting body weight to him that fit, like, you really feel the age of like the history of this character in that performance. And it's small stuff like that throughout these movies that like keeps me on always on the side of Stallone being a great actor argument.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You said it's a weight to the character, I really enjoyed all of them, especially the Creed films. As I said, the more recent ones I saw, and yeah, just blown away by how grounded it was for him, and
yeah,
and like you said, the sort of sadness that came out of the character. You just kind of wanted to put your arms through the screen and give him a big hug, and just, you know,
yeah,
your heart just went out to the guy, but. Again, that must obviously be the reason why a lot of people come back to this, because at the core of it, there's a really human story, you know, who can't relate to an underdog, to someone that has to ultimately fight just to even get noticed, you know. And if I remember correctly, the first film, the whole reason he gets picked is because he has a funny nickname, and
yeah,
it's kind of like a publicity stunt on the part of Apollo Creed, just thinking this will be fun, I'll fight this guy, and you know, it'll sort of be good for my career. Like, doesn't even think twice about the man.
Yeah,
it's only sort of later on that he realizes, oh, hang on, this guy can actually throw a punch. You know,
yeah,
things sort
a
of
lot,
take its
a
own.
Lot of this franchise is about hubris in that kind of regard as well. That ultimately ends up being Apollo Creed's fate as well, is kind of not willing to listen to the people around him a bit more. But it's completely like a random event that sees him thrust into this position. All that kind of event, like, we've probably all got our equivalent events that we always dream about. It's like, or maybe one day someone will just offer me this job out of the blue, or this thing out of the blue, and I'll be able to finally like show my like complete worth on a big stage. So yeah, that is an element as well, that slight wish fulfillment that kind of comes in with any kind of, even the most grounded sports movies, to kind of be the catalyst to get them going.
It certainly seems like it. I mean, I can see this as being a template as well for a lot of other films.
Think about the iconography of it has been kind of like channeled through so many different things. Like, I'm sure, like, certainly for people in our generation, they might, one of the first places they might have heard the theme tune was the 118 118 advert. So there is this element of like the kind of, even it stretches and probably just towards like boxing movies in general, like,
yeah,
it's going to, and sport, it's going to like so many different fabrics of culture, and has a very big footprint on pop culture, really.
Yeah, absolutely. How sad is that our generation can link it to an advert?
Yeah.
Incredible. But yeah, you're right, it's something that is parodied time and time again.
Because I think like one of the first like tastes of Rocky, or like mentions of Rocky I had, would have been in the Simpsons, where Bart trying to get out of a trap and adds the Roman numerals together. Rocky 2 plus Rocky 5 equals Rocky 7, Adrian's Revenge. But I think I could probably credit The Simpsons for most of my like first introductions to a lot of things. But like,
oh, same.
Again, it's that sense of permeance throughout like pop culture for the last 40 years that Rocky's had. Is it's very easy to track and also quite surprising, because I know like Titley, when developing like the Creed soundtrack, Ludwig Göransson, who composed the score, was able to get a lot of R&B artists to collaborate with him, because there's so much love for the Rocky franchise in kind of rap and R&B culture as well, which like, yeah, it's mad. And like, that's a big thing I think as well in the Rocky movies, is the music throughout all of them is so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Did they say why it has such a resonance with them? Or I guess it's probably for the similar reasons we've been discussing.
Yeah, I think, again, like this underdog character, and I think particularly if you look at, I think largely that the area, like the Philadelphia area as well, views him as such like a larger than life figure, even in the history of Philadelphia as a city. I mean, like one of the statues has been donated to the city and is up around, and like the steps up to the art museum are called the Rocky Steps. So it even has, it has such a big impact on the people in the city it's set in, because like the city has itself really embraced the legacy and iconic imagery of it as well. So that's going to bleed out into any kind of culture that city produces, really.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think I heard, I'm going to give a mild plug to a previous guest, Mark, who was on here. And yeah, he had an interview on his podcast, Mark and Me, with a guy. I didn't realize this was a thing, but he had an interview with a guy who, his job was to basically take people on like a Rocky tour of the city, and he could do he did a really good impression of the guy. Do you know what? I listened to that interview that he did with him, and I thought it was so uplifting just listening to this guy. And sort of similar to what you're saying, like, there's something really undeniably, yeah, just motivating and empowering about these films. And like you say, it's no surprise that it goes through to the city, and they're proud to do that and to offer tourists the opportunity to, yeah, come and see the stairs, yeah, see the cafe where, you know, Rocky was, and do all of that stuff. You think, yeah, why not? And from what I hear, the Stallone is more than happy to come back, and, you know, he'll sort of pass through the city on a semi-regular basis and drop in and sign stuff for people and, you know, do things like that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree, because like you, with any kind of somebody who gets associated with such an iconic character, you imagine there must be points in their career, as I'm sure was the case with Stallone, around the Rocky Five era, where you kind of question whether you should be tied in with one role in particular. But as with like a lot of actors who seem to kind of start out in these early roles, and then as they get into their older age, they do just like any kind of sense of worry that they're being too tied to it is completely washed away, and there's just like a complete embracing of the character and the love that there is for him, and how much people look at you as that character as well. I mean, that's got to be a hard thing to deny yourself.
Yeah, totally. And so talk to us a bit more about the music then, because you've mentioned it a couple of times with different composers and bands. And I mean, obviously, who doesn't know that there's that, you know, iconic Rocky theme, like say of him running up the stairs.
Exactly. So there's only been three composers on the Rocky franchise as a whole. So Bill Conti did 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6. Bill Conti was John G. Alvinson's go-to composer. So he also did like the Karate Kid as well. So he's got pedigree in sports movies. Yeah, and like he's the one who like set down all these iconic fanfares, and also wrote the music to Gonna Fly Now, the big theme in there. And the second composer was Vince DiCola, who I'm trying to remember his other credits. The only one that's coming to my mind right now is Transformers the movie, the animated one from the 80s. But he did Rocky IV, and is like, again, the music in that is entirely in key with the whole amped up aesthetic of that movie. It's all very synth driven, percussion based.
Yeah.
But really, really great music for like getting quite pumped to. Like his training montage and fight montage music is very different to the kind of way Conti addresses it, with more of a kind of traditional full orchestra, trumpeting fanfares. But DiCola's music has its own kind of value in that it is still electrifying without having it. Fits more the kind of techie, almost amped up vibe, I say, of Rocky IV in general, and really plays well with the songs that you have from like Survivor in there, who of course also did Eye of the Tiger for Rocky III. So there's your second like big iconic song coming out of the franchise. And then kind of fast forwarding to the Creed movies, you have Ludwig Göransson working on them, who has worked with Ryan Coogler as well on Black Panther, and he's currently scoring The Mandalorian. So he is like he did Tenet as well this year, so he is like the hot composer on the scene at the minute. And the Creed movies feel like the first place where he kind of, particularly with larger blockbuster fare, really got to strut his stuff. And he adds some real kind of, again, is more akin to Conti than the Rocky IV vibes, but he adds so much kind of like big bravado and muscular energy to the scores that kind of help that sense of reinvigoration that is running throughout those whole two films. And there's that perfect moment in the first Creed where throughout the film the score's been largely working on new themes with around Donnie's character, themes that kind of are new, but they slightly echo what Conti's original themes were in the original. But it's not until the moment where we're about to go into the final round of the final fight, and like he's gotten a pep talk from Rocky as he's about to go in and like really show what he's worth and that he is a Creed. And as soon as the bell goes, that's when you get like, bum, 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 bum. It really knows how to, like, it knows the power that that kind of iconography of that music can have, but also how kind of fragile it will be to have just, like, thrown that in at, like, any earlier point in the film, or had, like, gonna fly now as the theme in the montage. The film is a little smarter than that and knows that in order to feel like a part and parcel and a truly worthy successor to like the Rocky legacy, it has to use those themes in really key moments where they're really going to be at their most emotionally riling and fulfilling. And like to use that fanfare in that moment in that film is a real kind of boom moment of like, yes, we've done it, we're here, we feel like we're confident, we've got this. And it really works for that kind of like final declaration in the first Creed movie.
Absolutely, man. I mean, yeah, I'm just getting pumped just listening to you talk about it, because yeah.
It's I listened to some of the Creed 2 soundtrack before.
You're getting yourself pumped up for a podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. Because again, there's like a brilliant training montage track that is Ludwig Göransson's score that like then weaves in an original song that A$AP Rocky did for the film as well. And it's just like this complete combination of kind of more classical orchestral with more modern music that really like gives it a real kind of defining energy onto itself for the Creed movies, but also so amped up and respectful of the musical legacy that's come before it. Which, again, it's such an achievement of those movies to bring this kind of whole new musical landscape, because it knows how important music has been to the franchise in the past, it doesn't want to drop the ball on that part, and it, like, they never do. Both of the soundtracks of those movies are so good.
Yeah, well, absolutely, they should be. It's, you know, music's one of those things in a film that, you know, score and a soundtrack can really make or break.
Yeah,
you know,
and always one of the first things I'll listen out for.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, really, isn't it? Because I think sometimes
it is hard.
It's a fine line, I think, between, you know, overdoing it and then not doing enough. You know, you can definitely go through a film and not notice a score if it's that unmemorable. But then at the same time, I can think of films I've been in where, like, it's just been too much. So it's nice when something strikes the balance. And you're right, in a film like this, in a franchise like this, that's definitely important. I mean, who of us, if, you know, you're going for a run or you're lifting weights or, you know, you choose no exercise in any sort of form. Personally, I really struggle if I don't have good tunes, you know.
Yeah.
I need some motivation. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a film where it's pretty much workout montages and fighting and you're building all this character up, absolutely, you need an absolute banging soundtrack in the back. Of course you do.
Exactly, exactly. And particularly in the case of Rocky IV, when your film is,
yeah,
like 35% montage. Might even be more.
Yeah, probably is. That's the first thing I think of, actually, when someone says Rocky IV. I just picture, like, the sort of juxtaposed montages. I think, is it Rocky running around in the mountains and you've got,
yeah,
what's his name there with all these, like, bells and whistles, and it's very 80s.
Ivan Drago's
got flashing lights.
All his tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just as a Simpson, like, going,
yeah.
it's mad as well, because you have one training montage that's set to Vince DiCola's score. That is the one that's him running up the mountain and, like, kind of showing the two sides being different in their approaches. And then literally there's one little filler scene where he has a chat with Adrian, and then it's right in into another training montage. And then after that, it's straight into the fight montage. That there's it, that the last, like, 25 minutes of that movie must be purely montage.
That's fantastic.
I love it for that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to me that, like, the sequel films, like Creed in particular, build off of the nostalgia as well. You know, because the first one is, as you say, the son of Apollo Creed comes in, and that's sort of his sort of arc is where this franchise is now going. And the second one, yeah, they bring back Ivan Drago and his son, and it seems to be something that's doing really well. Like, me and my wife have just got into Cobra Kai. Like, I just sort of got on that, and it's fantastic. You know, we went back and watching the old Karate Kid films and that, and I was saying to her later today, I was like, there does seem to be this sort of resurgence for the 80s and, you know, that kind of thing going on. So it makes sense that, like, the Creed films in particular pick up on that quite nicely.
Yeah, and I think the Creed films and Cobra Kai as well are two of the better examples of how to do a legacy sequel as well, because they allow the kind of storied weight of their individual franchises to kind of be emotionally mined rather than just kind of callously exploited as a means of a quick buck to cash in on nostalgia. Neither of them really feel like that. They feel like they're genuinely telling emotionally resonant stories through the prism of iconic characters within their franchises, but they're also building fresh stories that feel like they've got a lot of value, particularly to modern audiences.
Big time. I get the sense as well, particularly from, like, Creed 2, of this thing which I think is quite a human. I mean, all of it's really a sort of human experience, as we've established. But the second film in particular, I feel like it deals with this very natural fear that we all have of history repeating itself. You know, you get this thing of parents sort of doing their best to try and steer children away from making the same mistakes and inadvertently steering them right into the path of it. And, you know, that's kind of how, like, Creed 2 opens up, isn't it? It's almost like history repeating itself straight away.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what Rocky's dealing with is that whole guilt and sort of thinking, I can't do this again. And for that, and, you know, I think that's part of the reason why that film has such a great emotional resonance with people.
I agree. And, like, because that, again, is, like, the big worry, I guess, around when Creed 2 was coming out, was how does it kind of legitimize the most outlandish installment in its more grounded reality that the first one established. And it manages to do that literally just by giving characters more, particularly the cartoonish 80s villain stereotypes of Ivan Drago. It just gives them more and actually treats them as characters rather than caricature, and that is just, it is an easy way to deepen, I say it's an easy way, it's the easy decision to make, but it's harder to then put that into practice and to actually make it feel surprising and hefty. And I do think Creed 2 is very good at that, because it has very strong parallels with a lot of the father and son tensions and dynamics running through it, and the Drago's one is as compelling as anything that's going on between Donnie and Rocky, or Rocky and his son. And that is a testament to their approach that doesn't try to cut too many corners with it. It does take the time to develop something a bit more substantial than you may be anticipating.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I was surprised by that. It sort of kind of humanized Ivan Drago quite a lot, which I find really shocking, because as you say, that sort of, in the prism of that film, in the fourth one in particular, he is just the big baddie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of this, you know, merciless guy, and it sort of sets up that movie quite well. But actually, it's really nice that they bring that back and go, oh, hang on a minute, there's another side to this story.
Yeah, exactly. And again, kind of looking at Rocky IV as this kind of like the weird, both outlier, but also strangely the one that's had the most relevance over where this franchise has ended up going. And like even to the point now where Stallone's re-editing it and is releasing a director's cut. I think in the next coming weeks, because it's the 35th anniversary next week that Rocky IV came out. So I know the intention was to get the director's cut out before then, but whether it will be, we'll see. But again, yeah, it's just one that clearly Stallone loves coming back to, and I'm intrigued to see what a director's cut looks like. I wonder if it's more montage. Or whether Drago himself will have a bit more.
We need 70% montage, not 35%.
Mm-hmm. Let's break the record.
Yeah, I imagine that. And there's like an entire other score that they didn't use, and they'll just chuck that in. And who knows? I mean, I'll say this much. Apparently the robot's gone. Oh, well, that's a shame. I'm more on board for that than I am for the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. But that's for another podcast.
Yeah. The Stallone cut. Get that going.
Yeah. Yeah. Get that trending on Twitter. No, I love that. So, I mean, I'm just curious then. Is there anything else that kind of, that you love about these films? I mean, you've covered so many great things already, but is there anything else that sort of stands out to you every time you go back and rewatch these films?
I think for me, it's particularly as you see other people kind of reacting to them, because I always think of like sometimes with films that you watch from a young age and then you continue to love into your adult life. If you then introduce these films to someone who hasn't grown up with them and doesn't have this attachment, then they can sometimes not really do much to impress that person. I think I always find Star Wars is one that whenever I meet people who maybe watched it when they were a bit older, just don't kind of have the same affinity for it or kind of really get it in the same way that people, I say get it, I really mean more the kind of nostalgic attachment to that is such a, I think, pivotal part of that particular fandom. But with Rocky, there's, again, I think it just distills down to like the kind of perfect sports movie formula that is just so very hard to deny yourself, and that it's so easy to be swayed into it. And yeah, I just think it's going to be one of these franchises that for me will never feel like it won't be able to deliver exactly what I'm expecting from it, and it will always be one I go back to as a kind of comfort blanket as well as a motivator as well. So it is just one of those collections of films that really just does a great deal for my like self motivation and just like general well-being whenever I watch them, because they do always find a way to stir something up and like really invigorate me no matter how many times I watch them. And I do just love them for that.
No, absolutely, man. I mean, and not to knock it, because I do love Star Wars, and I've already said that on this podcast before, but
it's a hard fandom to talk about. Yeah, as soon as I started going into it, I was like, oh.
So I brushed a gup against it in a previous episode, so don't worry. But yeah, stuff like that, as you say, it's very much nostalgia. It's, you know, you see them as a kid, and I think as you get older, like, you know, I've had that with the latest trilogy. I've come back to it enjoying them, but like as you say, that exact feeling of it's not landing the same way, and I'm like, well, it's because I'm an adult now, and these are primarily stories for children, and that's fine.
Yeah, you
know, and that's great, that's what they're there for, and long may it continue, you know. Especially like, you know, The Mandalorian, I'm absolutely loving, but again, it's not landing the same way as it would if I was perhaps a little kid, but that's fine. But yeah, as you say, the Rocky films, yeah, I guess because of what we've already discussed, really, that the themes that they touch upon being so universal, that, yeah, it makes sense that it's going to land with you no matter what age you are, whether you're a sick little boy watching it at home for the first time, or, you know, whether you're an adult watching it and you're going, oh, I should really get this done or do that project, or, you know, like you said, that kind of rousing motivation.
So maybe I will go for a run tomorrow.
Yes, maybe I will. I mean, it's maybe. It's a bit cold, it's dark, maybe. But maybe. Yeah,
exactly. You know. What's the weather doing?
But that's the thing, isn't it? And I think that's something that, you know, those kind of fantasy films usually rely on a type of character where it's the chosen one and there's destiny, and, you know, and they're fine for what they are, but I think the Rocky films are an excellent example of a character that doesn't have any special powers, isn't, you know, predetermined, is largely ignored for, you know, a lot of the first one. And as we've said, he's picked by chance. He's almost picked as a cruel joke, but just through hard work and dedication, and as you've said, sticking to your morals and your principles, he's able to make something. And that's, I mean, who doesn't love that kind of journey? It's hard not to root for somebody like that. And I think that can appeal to all of us. You know, not saying all of us are going to go out and become world champion boxers, but there's something, I think, in it that's...
Get in line.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there's something in it that's quite appealing and quite, encouraging, as you say. So yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah, you don't need to like boxing. You don't even need to like sports movies.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, there's just something that's very, very, very easy to love.
Yeah, and these sort of kind of films land well. And like I said, I mentioned Cobra Kai. I'm really digging that. And one of my favourites, which is very heavily influenced by the Rocky films, is the film Warrior. Tom Hardy, you know. And you can totally see it is basically mirroring that sort of journey. But it's those kind of films, like, yeah, I can totally see why people love them. And yeah, Rocky's the one that started them all. So I know you've definitely got me thinking I need to go back and actually watch the whole lot all the way through.
Yeah, it's a fun ride, particularly like keep your like one eye on the larger Stallone filmography at large as well, and you'll track the trajectory as they mirror each other.
Definitely, that's awesome, man. So where should people begin then? I guess to start from number one if they want to get into this.
Yeah, I would definitely just work through them all chronologically. That's the best way to do it. And then I've taken to doing a little crib trilogy, in doing just like Rocky 4, Creed, and Creed 2. It works very well.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true. Those stories do line up quite nicely to each other. Yeah, so there you go. If you want to start there as well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Is there anything else you wanted to cover with us, Andy?
I'm trying to think. I think I've pretty much hit all the points I was hoping to land here.
Okay. I hope so. I mean, like I say, you've definitely got me inspired to go and check these out. but
I might watch one now as well.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask then, where can the good people find you, Andy?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at AndyGodian93. That's where I probably do most of my social media interactions. I'm also currently working on a podcast called At Ramblin' Amblin, which is going to be going through all the films under the Amblin Entertainment banner. Looking forward to having you on in a future episode to return this favour.
That's absolutely fine.
That's going to be out soon. Got the first episodes nearly ready to go. So, yeah, that's something I'm working on. And, otherwise I'm on Twitter and I write reviews and features for a variety of different sites. Give me a follow on there if you're interested in what I have to say.
I'll certainly do. I'll plug that. And I have to say, I'm looking forward to that. I think the idea is brilliant. So anyone who doesn't know, just go and look up the Amblin Entertainment movie list. It's quite a list that you've got there. I'm looking forward to hearing how that pans out.
I did very nearly go, maybe I should do an Amblin on this podcast to best also talk up. But then I kind of went, you're going to be talking about Amblin for the best part of the next year now. So maybe do something else first.
Absolutely. Give yourself a break.
Before we dive in. We're looking forward to that.
Totally, man. And again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for talking to me about this. I think it's been brilliant.
Always happy to extol the gospel of Rocky Balboa. So
it's a privilege. Well, thanks. Thank you, Andy.
No problem, man. Thank you.
And there we have it. Another great episode down with an amazing guest. Thank you so much to Andrew for coming on to the show and sharing your love of the Rocky franchise. It was absolutely brilliant. If you want to hear more from Andrew and his love of movies, then definitely go and subscribe to the Ramblin' and Amblin' podcast, where he will be going through all the movies produced by the Amblin Entertainment Company. I think it's a great concept for a podcast, and I cannot wait to hear more. As Andrew said, I will be making an appearance on the pod, and I cannot wait. And that's really it for me. If you guys are enjoying this particular episode, then tell me. Let me know. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Both handles are at FundamentalsPod. I would love to hear from you. If you're enjoying the show in general, then do me a favor. Tell a friend. It costs nothing to retweet and share if you're listening. And if you'd like to go ahead and leave a review, 5 stars preferably, on your chosen app, that would also be brilliant. And if you do that for me, definitely tell me, because you will get a shout out on the pod. It really is the least that I can do. But thank you so much, though, for the support. It means the world to me. Every download just makes my day. So thank you so much. I won't be back with a guest in a few weeks' time, but I will be back with a special project of mine that I've been working on, and I hope all of you guys will enjoy it, and then your regularly scheduled programming will resume in the new year. So, until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.